Hello, everyone, and welcome to Double Shelix.
I'm Sally.
And I'm Kayla. And we're so excited to talk to you all today about summer research and, more specifically, summer research experience for undergraduates.
So I think today we're going to have an amazing conversation about like how to make the most of a summer research experience, like what if you are in charge of organizing a summer research experience for undergraduates, what the most impactful components of that can be, how to be a successful like overseer of undergraduates in summer research from all the different perspectives of like mentorship and like friendship and peer support. And we're saying summer, we're gonna say talk about summer research, but I think that what we're gonna talk about really applies to summer research and other kinds of short-term research experiences.
I think what's key here is that you're immersed very deeply into an experience, but for a short amount of time.
Absolutely.
So this is relatable, for example, if like we have a rotation program for first year graduate students, which comes with a different set of goals and pressures, but it's a similar
Right.
length of time and intensity
Absolutely.
and unknowing what you're doing before you start. So,
Or lack thereof. Yeah.
That's the un.
Oh, un. Oh,
I made up
yes.
a word just for this.
Unknowing what you're doing. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. So before we start, I think a super, super valuable resource. Some of the things that we're going to talk about touch on that, but everyone should go and read on thestemsquad.org. Christine Liu on thestemsquad.org has written an amazing article called How to Make the Most of Your Summer Research Experience. And this is just like super practical tips. So we will touch on some practical tips, but if you're looking for more, I highly recommend that reference and that resource, and we can put a link to it in our show notes. But anyway, summer research, Kayla, for you, I know in our very first episode was talk our very first episode like forever ago was find and succeed in your next first job. So I think you talked about some of your summer research experiences and the context of them being your first job. But for you, like what were the challenging or rewarding and what were the challenging and then the rewarding aspects of a summer research sort of intensive experience that you've had?
So let's see. I did, maybe I should first start with what I actually did.
If you want. Yeah.
So for the first summer, after my freshman year, I just sort of volunteered part-time to do research at a university near me. So that wasn't quite the same as this, where you're in, like in there 4 hours a week plus diving in deep. But the next summer, then I had a great opportunity to work in the entomology department.
Yes, bugs.
It was awesome. I really loved that job. It was a lot of fun. So I was basically studying bees and a type of Drosophila that was infecting fruits. I'm probably gonna spoil fruits for everyone.
Fruits are full of bugs.
Fruits are full. You've probably eaten so many bugs. If you've eaten a raspberry, you've eaten larvae. Just so you know.
Yay! Especially if you've eaten an organic
Don't
raspberry.
worry though, they're not bad for you.
Proteins.
Anyway, so it was a lot of fun, and what was cool about that was that a little bit of the project was trying to understand some of the types of smells that the flies were attracted to, which had a little bit more of a chemistry component for me, but for the most part, it was not something I was doing.
Which I think is a super important lesson because just because you're in a summer research experience as an undergrad, I think we'll get into this more in the episode, but a lot of what you learn in a summer research experience isn't necessarily like how to do tissue culture. The fact that there is approximately 10 to the third larvae in every kilogram of organic raspberries, right? It's more about like what is research, how to conduct a project, how to set goals, how to achieve those goals, how to have a positive relationship with your mentors. And so undergrads, like if you're listening and you feel like, oh, I didn't get into my first choice lab, like doing MRI research, like should I take this other job doing like biomaterials research, blech, you should lean in.
And on a related note to that, I was really interested in doing this job because of my agriculture background.
Farms, yes.
Yes, but I also had some anxiety about like This is so far out from what I normally do. Is this gonna make it hard to get into grad school? But that's not even true at all.
Right.
It's so much about, like you said, like learning how to do research.
Right.
Not the exact work that you're doing, because probably in reality you won't even accomplish that much.
Sad but true.
Yeah.
But it's okay, because no one expects, I mean, not that no one expects you to, but people understand that as an undergraduate researcher, you are contributing intellectually to the group, but you're also there to learn, and you're a student, and so students are, you're right. There to learn. So right. It's fine.
Right. And it's like amazing if you can contribute.
One graph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
I raise your hand if you've spent a summer and gotten one graph. Hands raised.
Double.
Hands are raised all around.
Yeah. And then, so the last summer in the midst of college, I guess, I was in a more formal program, but it was also a continuation of the work I was doing during the semester.
Mm.
So that was really nice, because I was getting paid to do the work in the summer.
Yes.
And also the program had a lot of formal components that I wouldn't have had if I was not in the program.
Oh, okay. Like what?
So, for example, one of the things that was really, really beneficial to me was that this program had a weekly seminar about basically how to do whatever you're doing next.
Mm.
So a lot of them were focused on applying to jobs or to graduate school or to fellowships.
Mm.
And this was the first time that I had really gotten any of that information, or even found out that these fellowships were available and I should probably apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was conveniently in between my junior and senior year.
Oh, perfect. So you like write them at these little workshops and then can use them.
Right, exactly.
And so you won them and got into grad school. So
woo!
It was obviously a success.
It was a lot of people's editing right there. But anyway, so that was really cool. And those seminars specifically were really, really good.
Yeah, I think if you are part of an organized summer for undergraduates who are going into researching this summer, or like internships at big companies are very similar or can be, if you're going into this summer and you are part of an organized group that has these sort of seminar series, absolutely like take advantage of them. And if you're not, what I've been in group situations before where some of the students in the lab will be part of an officially organized thing, like an Amgen situation or like a specific department's undergraduate like research group, and then other undergraduates in the lab will say like, hey, you have this seminar series, like, can I tag along?
Mm-hmm.
So usually the programs are pretty amenable to like other undergraduates coming, because they've already done the work of like bringing in the speaker. And so just you being there and like learning and participating. I mean, the worst thing that happens is they say no, but definitely ask. Okay. So the programming, and also I've been to ones where it was less structured than this.
Yeah.
But where, you know, the first week was how to succeed in a summer undergraduate research program, which you don't even need because you're listening to this podcast and you read the resource from Christina on the STEM Squad. Another one was like how to make a poster presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Because undergrads, graduate students, can I tell you one of my pet peeves?
I would love to hear it.
Okay. Graduate students and postdocs, I'm talking to you, okay? An undergrad has been in your research group for the entire summer, and they have been working hard. And it just grinds my gears when graduate students and postdocs don't even look at the draft of their undergraduate's poster. The least you can do is look at their poster and help them.
Yes.
Give them one of your old posters so they can use the format. Because it took you a long time to, like, make those curvy edge boxes and, like, put them in the right place. Give them one of your old posters so they can use the format. Because that takes hours.
Learn what the format should look like.
Exactly. Help. Like, you don't have to walk them through it, but give them your old poster. Say, use this format or resize the boxes and use something similar. And then have them make the draft. Have them give it to you ahead of time. Have set schedule significant time. Like not just the day before you have to print it, but, like, several days so that you can read it and then help them make it better. Because as an undergraduate student, like if your student goes and sees that everyone else's poster is the same way and theirs is different, they're going to feel really bad about themselves. And that's going to hinder their feeling of belonging in your group. And that's going to hinder their feeling of belonging in science, right?
Also, it's just, I mean, you wouldn't leave your student to, I don't know, learn pipetting on their own. Why would you?
I have no patience for this. And you are an author or could be an author on your undergraduate student's poster, right? It's not that big a deal unless your undergraduate wins a prize. Like, if your undergraduate wins a prize and you're for their poster and you're an author on their poster, like, that's something that can go on your resume. Like, my undergraduate won, like, 2 prizes. So, like, normally I wouldn't put her posters on my resume because it's, like, her project and I'm an author. But she won a prize. So, like, that's, like, a big deal. So, good for her. I see this so often and I have no patience for it.
Yeah. And it doesn't even take that long.
It doesn't even take that long.
And it will make a huge difference on their ability to communicate science.
That being said, if you're an undergrad student, you can say, like, hey, just so you know, our poster fair is going to be on August 18th. If I send you the poster on August 12th, can we look at it together?
Oh, yeah. And don't be the student that sends it to your mentor the day before. And it's like, can you get this back to me tomorrow?
No. Yeah, no. But... like, clarify ahead of time. Like, first of all, you should listen to our episode about next level mentorship for mentees and mentors with Julia Volsakis. It will tell you everything you need to know about having sort of an excellent relationship with your mentor. But one of the most important things is identifying mutual goals and expectations. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning of the semester, one of your mutual goals and expectations is going to be this poster or whatever report or kind of thing that you have to do. And if there's not some sort of organized poster session for some sort of group, like, at the end of summer is ground zero for undergrad poster sessions. So ask around your lab and see if there's any other, or like department admins, like, I don't know, but find out if there's another poster session that you can go to. Because you've been working for a summer, you'll have something to put on a poster.
Yeah, that's the other fallacy. I think a lot of students come in thinking, I didn't get anything done. It's like, no, you did stuff. There's things to talk about.
Actually, we have a listener story about this that we didn't put in the You Do Belong in Science series, but we can put it in right now. Take it away, listener.
One time, I was an undergrad and a researcher, and I had to go to my first conference where I had to present a poster. And as an undergrad and someone who was new to research, I was terrified because talking about my research to other people is scary. And it's like, I didn't know what I was doing or if I had any results that were, like, worth talking about because I, like, did some things and, like, did stuff, but, like, do I have conclusions and actual data? Unclear. But I, like, made my poster best I could, went to the poster session, felt really out of place until I started talking to people. And then it was like, oh, science is hard. People understand. It's not just, like, you're a failure if you don't get data. It's like, you tried these experiments. Okay, it's not about showing off. It's at a conference and poster, a lot of the times you want to just get feedback. And so just like talk to people about your work. And if it didn't work, talk to each other about this. And so it was interesting because I kind of thought that I didn't belong in science because I didn't think I did a good enough job. But being at this conference where I was talking to other people who also had posters and also did research and also like knew what it was like to have a hard time with research made me feel like I did belong in science because, you know, science is hard. Doesn't mean that I'm a bad scientist if experiments don't always work. That's how science is. And so being in the scientific community and expressing this is okay and learning that for the first time was useful and made me feel like I did belong in science.
Listener, thank you for sharing. I think most of the listeners here can identify with thinking that your research sucks, but then realizing that it wasn't as good as you wanted it to be, but it's still pretty great.
Yeah.
And I have given a poster in undergrad that had one piece of data on it, and that was fine.
Yep.
People love my poster.
Yep.
It looked really great.
Yeah.
It's fine. So, point of a poster session is to practice talking mm-hmm. about your project with your peers. And honestly, of all the things in science, whether like ways of communicating, so speaking on panels, giving research talks, giving like science excitement talks, and doing posters, my favorite is like talking about science in a general, like science enthusiasm, you do belong, kind of women in STEM, empowerment, inclusion kind of stuff. That's my favorite. My second favorite, but that's like cheating because that's way cool. My second favorite is posters. I would much rather attend a poster session than listen to a bunch of talks. And I would much rather give a poster than give a talk. Because people, like, give you feedback that helps you. That helps you.
That's true. The feedback is great.
The feedback is amazing. Yeah, and if you feel like your research is not A+, like, after you go to the poster session and incorporate the feedback that you got, it will be A+.
Yes.
That being said, graduate students out there, you know what else I do not have patience for?
Tell us.
Oh. It's graduate students and sometimes professors, but usually not. Oh, and sometimes postdocs, who go to undergrad poster sessions and give the undergrads a really hard time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ask questions. Be curious. Learn more. You're not there to tell the undergrad that their research is bad or that your research is better.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not their qualifying exam. You're not there to test the limits of their knowledge.
Because they're not going to match you. Shocker.
Yeah, guess what? They're not as smart as you. Look, we already knew that. You don't have to prove it to us. Yeah. But I think... I know a lot of people who have really been turned off from science from something that a person said to them at a poster fair. But, all right, so we're just all over the place on this episode. But yeah. Posters, you'll do great. What else can we talk about?
So I would love – okay, so first of all, I talked about the formal parts of the program that were mm-hmm. really beneficial, and I had no idea that was coming.
Like, right.
That's not why I joined the program, right? But that was really cool. Another thing that a lot of these programs have is a socializing aspect.
Absolutely.
Mine, not so much. Like, it was mostly about, like, the research, the seminars, and then some lunches or something.
Right.
Did you have a different experience?
Yeah. So, of course, there were, like, when I did research programs, you know, you could go to seminars and eat the free lunch and then talk to people afterward.
Yeah.
But I would say that for me, the socializing that was the most beneficial wasn't at, like, little mixers to, like, get free snacks. It was really the relationships that I formed with other people in my research group and other people whose, like, labs were nearby where we would, like, eat lunch together.
Mm.
And I think that for an undergrad in particular, the summer can be a very valuable time because there's no classes. You can spend more time in the lab. You can talk to... you have more opportunity to talk to students that might be more busy during the school year. And so for me, partly is my personality, but I did make it a goal to have, like, significant conversations, but, like, more than just, hey, what's up, nothing, bye, conversations with everyone else in the group so that I could understand, like, not only their research project,
mm-hmm.
so that I could understand, like, things that were valuable to me. So first of all, understanding the research of everyone in the group. I mean, you're not going to, like, understand it, but, like, know broadly what they work on, and then more specifically, like, what they're dealing with right now. It's also important to figure out who is trained on what equipment,
mm-hmm.
because your mentor is probably not going to want to be training you on every single thing, so find out who's trained in what equipment, become their friend, and then they can train you on this new equipment, and just showing a general eagerness to learn. I think that is a super great way to make a positive impression on the group. So this is to say, if your project is totally not related to protein synthesis, but you know there are people in the group that do protein synthesis, you can say, like, hey, I'm really interested in protein synthesis. Like, I'd love to sit down and talk about your project and then shadow you while you use our new synthesizer.
Yeah.
This can help you not only to think about new ways to improve your current project, but also going forward at a job interview, you'll be able to speak more about the different techniques. You might not have done them, but you'll be familiar with them and you won't, like, put your foot in your mouth when talking about things.
Yeah.
So talking to people in the group about their research, talking to them about the different equipment, and it's, if you have free time, like, don't just be on Wikipedia or don't just be like wasting time. Like, ask other trainees if you can shadow them. If you feel nervous at first about going up to a senior postdoc and saying, like, Kayla, can I shadow you? Try to just shadow one of your friends, like another undergrad in the group or one of the graduate students, and say, like, I'd love to learn more about this technique. Like, can I watch you do it? Can I learn how to do it?
Yes. On the note of what happens if you aren't doing anything at the moment, what should you do? Because here's one of the moments that to me differentiates the students that do end up making contributions.
Mm.
The students who do will take initiative to do something, even if they aren't being given a task constantly. So whether it's like reading papers or discussing research with people, like sometimes people just don't have time and that's okay.
Right.
But there's always more science to learn.
Absolutely.
And reading protocols ahead of time. I love when students come to me and they're like, yeah, I was reading about this, and I was trying to understand why we do it this way. Can you tell me more about that?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, yes, good reading. This is magical.
Yeah.
And on top of that, maybe we can talk about this more too. One of the presumably the benefits of participating in these programs is that you are going to have a recommender by the end. And spoiler alert, the person that spends the time with you is
going to be writing that.
A lot of influence on your letters.
And by a lot of influence, we kind of are saying without really saying that the PI is going to be like, "Dear Kayla, the undergrad Sally asked me for a letter of rec. Can you write a first draft? Best professor me." And then Kayla's going to write a first draft, send it to the professor, and then the professor's going to puff it up a little bit and submit it. So
if you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs,
it's okay to take breaks.
Oh, for sure.
But just make sure the perceptions, right? Like,
yeah.
If you're taking a break to look at your Facebook and update your Instagram story, which, let's be real, you need to, you know, you got to update. Like, maybe don't do that, like, at your desk. Like, go walk around and do it on your phone so that no one sees and they think you're at lunch, and then you come back and you can, like, shine and be, like, reading those review articles, like, catching up on protocols. Because perception matters, unfortunately. It's important to show that you can be productive even when your mentor isn't there.
Yes.
So I think a lot of times when students are spending time, like, on Facebook or, like, whatever, you know, it's fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times the reason that they do it is because they are unsure about the next step.
Yes.
And they don't know what to do next, or they don't know how to do it, or they got in before everyone. There's, like, literally no one there to ask.
Yes.
Or something like this, right?
Yes.
And so it's okay to not know what to do next. And it's okay to take breaks.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
Make sure that, like, you're not just taking an extended break because you do not know what to do next. Like,
yeah.
those two can both happen, and they're both important. But if you don't know what to do next, if you feel like you're stalled on your project,
yeah,
you can either try to find the answer yourself,
mm-hmm.
but that's hard.
Yeah.
Or you can just supplement your learning in other ways by doing the kinds of activities we described, reading papers, shadowing people, like updating your lab notebook. Also, lab notebooks. You know, I feel like graduate students and postdocs sometimes get lax lab notebook tendencies. As an undergrad, people are going to be less trusting of your science because
yes.
you're less experienced. And I think that that's true. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Right? Which means that if you have a finding that is weird in some way, which could be because you discovered something else and should win a Nobel Prize, and it could be because you messed up.
Yeah.
But the people are going to first say, like, I think you messed this up.
Yeah.
And so you have to have that lab notebook. It has to be creme de la creme.
Yes.
Like, every day you're updating.
Yeah.
And I think I know a story about – this has a happy ending, so don't worry. But this is like one of the professors that I knew in undergrad had an undergrad in her group. And the undergrad was trying to do some experiment that, like, had been done before. It was one of those experiments where, like, you do something to a cell and it, like, changes its properties. And, like, he was doing these cells and, like, something weird kept happening every single time that hadn't been reported in the literature. And he was doing, like, a literature-based protocol, but then when he did a control that wasn't done in the literature, he saw this new finding. And the professor and the grad student made him repeat this data, like, every single day for the whole summer because I thought he was doing it wrong. And at the end of summer, he was like, you guys, I am doing it right. Like, watch me do it. Here we go. He did the same protocol. He showed them their results, and he got a first author paper. But it was because he was, like, taking very diligent notes
yeah.
and really following up and really doing careful controls that he was able to prove that, like, yes, he has observed a new phenomenon and not just that he's doing poor work.
Right.
Because when the PI looked at it and was like, they're all dead, you did poor work.
Yeah.
He's like, no.
Right.
These are the controls. This is the protocol. Here's how what the protocol in the literature was wrong, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And since we're talking about notebooks, I also have to say that I forget as a mentor that people are going to come in without knowing how to use a notebook.
Absolutely.
And you got to take time to teach that to students. And students, there is a right way and there are wrong ways.
Right. Like, date everything, sign everything. But also, like, I try to give – yeah. I try to, like, date, name, project title, sub-project title. Goal. What's the goal of this experiment? Because when you go back to that notebook in 6 months, why did you do this experiment? No one knows. Like, maybe the goal is to confirm the results of the experiment that was on page 57 of notebook 4.
Yeah.
So, fine. Goal. Like, reagents, amounts, calculations. And I think another thing that's over, like, I'm guilty of this too, is you do an experiment, it doesn't work. You're like, that was weird, it didn't work. Okay, I'll try it again. But, like, you don't put it the first time in your notebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, a lot of the stuff I've done, you know, like, as an undergrad, you got it, like, the expectations are higher.
Yeah.
Because people trust you less.
Yeah.
And so lean into it. Just have the world's most thorough lab notebook.
Yes. Like, and on top of that, when you leave in 3 months or 2 months or whatever, and I'm trying to find out what condition was in that Western, I want to be able to read it in your notebook.
Right. And if Kayla can't find it in your notebook and has to go redo it herself, guess who's definitely not going to be an author on that paper? It's you.
Yeah, so this is a way to set yourself up to be a contributor.
Absolutely. And speaking of things like contributions and authorship, I know that every lab has their own drama about this. And some labs, like, once you're there for 4 years, you get on every paper. In some labs, like, only one author per paper. In some labs, the PI is the first author on the paper and all other contributors are in alphabetical order. You think I'm joking? I know some stuff. Anyway, but it's worth in the beginning asking your, like, I feel like students have a hard time, grad students and undergrads, have a hard time navigating these conversations.
Yeah.
So I think a great way to say it is to ask your mentor, Kayla, what are your goals for my project this summer? And Kayla will say, you know, like, your project is a subset of my project in this way.
Yeah.
And then you can say, excellent, like, I agree that this is a great goal and I think that we can work together and make this happen. Or if you think it have some concerns, say, like, these are my concerns. And then you can say something like, how do you see this subproject fitting into your larger project, particularly when it comes to, like, communicating our findings, right? Like, is this something that you're going to want to put in a poster, like in my poster? Are you going to want to take it to a conference? Like, or is this something that we want to put into a paper?
Right.
And then mentors, that opens up the door for you to tell your undergrad what you know about the lab's publication policies.
Yes.
Which you might not know them, but you should find them out.
Yeah. I feel like this is one of ethics class 101 is to talk about what is the goal for publishing at the beginning of the project. And I do think there's...
This is not done.
Yes, it is hard to talk about, especially at the beginning of the project where you don't know what is actually going to work.
Right.
But that's why you have to talk about it early and then talk about it often.
Right.
I think as the project begins, like, if everything was successful, here's how we do it. And then if it's not successful, here's how we do it. And then as the project progresses, you got to revisit that. Like, oh, great, you're, like, making this really cool contribution. Let's definitely keep that in and include you here. Or
right.
It seems like this isn't working. Let's just drop this part of the collaboration or something.
Right. And I think undergrads, I think there are exceptions to this, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that when it comes to publishing an undergrad, I don't want to diminish anyone who has published an undergrad, whether as a co-author or as a first author. But I think a lot of it does come down to luck. Like, being in the right lab,
yeah,
in the right project, at the right time, with the right supervisors. For example, in my situation, like, I joined a lab, and my mentor was planning to graduate at the same semester that I was planning to graduate. And so when he is finishing up his project,
yeah,
I'm doing experiments to help him finish his thesis.
Right.
And so I, in that case, was an author on some of his thesis papers,
yeah,
because I was there at the time when he was publishing them. If I had worked for him instead in the first 2 years of his PhD, almost nothing that he did in the first 2 years, like, welcome to grad school, everyone.
Yeah.
Like, almost nothing that you do in the first 2 years goes anywhere.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know what I mean?
You're right.
Like, a lot of it can be lucky. And, like, the student I described earlier who did this project, like, a million times and the PI kept being like, no. And then he was like, yes.
Right.
Like, he eventually got a first author paper.
Right.
But that's because he had an unexpected finding that
right.
he championed.
I totally agree, first of all, because I feel like I also experienced both ends of the spectrum,
uh-huh,
where, again, you're working with somebody who's sort of in a productive stage of their career and you can maybe you've had a little experience by that time, and then everything just kind of comes together. One of my research experiences that I was heavily invested in, both time-wise and experience-wise, and I was working on an independent project. Basically, all of those projects that got dismantled, and it was totally out of my control. So I just had to go find a new lab, and that was the end of them. And like, there's like my half-finished project and notebook and data is like sitting somewhere on a shelf. And I don't, like I said, it's undergrad. It's not like I'm gonna go apply for a grant to finish it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, so there is definitely moments that are out of your control, but the difference is that when you get those opportunities, you can take advantage of them, and if you don't have those opportunities, you can still shine through your work, and you'll still be able to talk about it.
Yeah, and if you want more tips on how to frame what you've contributed to a project in the context of an application for graduate school or fellowships or something like that, I highly recommend that you listen to our episode with Christina Fuentes and Shaheen Giawadi.
Yes.
About navigating pathways to graduate school, because in that we talk specifically about strategies for graduate school applications and writing them and how you can sort of frame what you've done, even if you don't have papers, like in the larger context. Yeah. And that being said, like if you're on an admissions committee, maybe have some sensitivity to the fact that whether or not an undergrad gets papers is largely determined by luck. And don't be one of those faculty or one of those graduate programs that's like, if you don't have two papers, you're not coming here. Because that definitely happens. And I do not think that there's room for that in academia.
So I had great summer experiences, but that is not always the case. And it's not always in your control, again.
Absolutely.
So what do you do if you are having a bad experience?
Excellent question. And I think a lot of students worry that they're going to have a bad experience, mm-hmm. But it's not that common. But I will say if you're having a bad experience, like it's probably not your fault. There are some labs, listen to our previous episodes, there are some labs that are toxic environments. And not to say that the blame fully falls on the PI in those cases, but there is a lot of literature from the management field talking about how CEO personality dictates corporate culture. So if you have a PI that is very vindictive and narcissistic or whatever, like it makes sense that the people that work for that person are not going to be happy and that some of that unhappiness might be taken out on you as an undergraduate. So if you're in a bad situation, here's what I'll say. First of all, it's probably not your fault. Second of all, you're not alone. Third of all, what should you do? If you're in some sort of organized program, you know, there's a group of you and you all meet and then you have these seminars. If you're into an organized program, figure out who the person is that's sort of in charge of that program, whether it's an admin or a different faculty, and ask to set up a one-on-one meeting with that person. And in that meeting, you can say, like, I'm really grateful to be in this program. Like, I was really excited to do this work, but I feel like I'm having trouble finding success in this program, and this is why. And then you can sort of say, you know, you don't want to open the floodgates of all the bad stuff that you've seen, but you can sort of describe in broad strokes the lab culture or...
Yeah, and I think when you do have those conversations, the tone is very important. Like your tone
should be very professional.
Exactly.
And the goal of this meeting with this higher up person should be like, I want to, how can you help me? How can we work together to make this a more productive experience, right?
Yeah. And I find that when you go to those cases where you need to ask for something, mm-hmm. or you're asking for help, sometimes you can. But if you can come in with kind of what do you envision that person helping you do,
right,
that's so helpful for getting something out of it.
Right.
Because sometimes if you come in, you're like, I don't know what to do. And they're like, okay, I don't know either.
Right. So things that you can do, I would say one is ask to spend more time in a different group, even if you're just like going over there to learn about stem cell tissue culture. You know, ask like, hey, like maybe we can get a relationship with the Wolf Lab and then they can help us like do this. And then also ask them to give you resources. That being said, like if it truly is a toxic culture where everyone is miserable, like you're probably not the first person that's complained about this. Right.
Yeah.
And I will say, if you're struggling, if there's someone within your own group that you can go to, like if it's not like a toxic culture situation, which are just, if it's a situation where you have a bad rapport with your mentor, for that, I would say find someone else in the group. And remember we talked about having those one-on-one meetings. In those one-on-one meetings, see if you can gauge, like, if your mentor, like, the anomaly here, like, maybe then you can just spend more of your time, like, shadowing other people or say, like, I'm really interested in your project, right? But also I will say that this is just a summer research project. And your goal is to learn and your goal is to do well and your goal is to get a letter of recommendation, right? But if this project really isn't going well and there's like a huge issue with the culture of the group, like that's okay. You know, you don't feel like you have to stay there for 90 hours a week. You know, your health and well-being is important. So if this summer kind of doesn't work out, it's okay.
Yeah, if you're in that kind of toxic situation, spend less emotional investment.
Yes.
You know, you put in your time, you put in your effort, but realize that, like, this isn't your end all.
Absolutely. And it does seem like the hugest deal in the world to get a letter of recommendation, but it's not.
And I think when you're in the middle of any semester, that semester feels like it's the longest semester of your whole college career.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think, like, if I don't do this and this and this in this semester, everything will be bad, but that's not true.
Absolutely.
Actually, a lot of semesters, and once you finish and you look back at all of them, like the ones that were less stellar than others, they seem much smaller.
Absolutely.
So, it is temporary.
I hope this hasn't been a downer. Like, your experience will probably be really good, but
yeah.
I feel that over the course of my graduate school, having met a lot of students, especially and having known and been close friends with students who are in extremely toxic situations, I'm really sensitive to the specific stressors that those students go through from a graduate student perspective. And God, I can't imagine being an undergrad in one of those groups.
Yeah. Oh. These situations are rare, but unfortunately
really,
not unheard of.
Yeah, it's really hard. So that being said, like, if you have a great situation, how do you end it on a good note?
Or even a normal situation.
Right. If your situation is non-toxic, how do you end on a good note? So I think the first thing is that at least once, different PIs are different, but no matter how busy your PI is, try to meet with that person at least once in the semester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More if possible, but at least once. Try to have a one-on-one meeting with that with your boss or have your mentor accompany you to a meeting.
Yeah.
That should absolutely be happening in every kind of summer research situation because professors, if you don't have time for a 15-minute meeting with an undergrad who is dedicating their entire summer to you, then you do not deserve to have undergrads working for you because that is a privilege. Anyway, so following up, remember that your mentor is writing your letter of recommendation, probably not your PI.
Yeah.
Also, so as you leave, how do you make a good impression?
Oh, let me tell you the things. First of all, put everything that you did into working order.
Mm-hmm.
That includes cleaning things up, especially things that didn't work. Make sure that you just, like, you leave it in a good place. Once you do leave, stay in touch. And it's very simple. It's like saying, thank you so much for your mentorship this summer, blah, blah, blah. If you, for example, I don't know, present the work later. Like sometimes the programs have the presentations later.
Yeah.
Like you invite the person and you tell them things. So you like tell them if how things went.
Absolutely.
As a person who's spending lots of time training you, it's like nice to know that your work turned into something.
And if they were a really good mentor to you, like one of my former mentees wrote me like the nicest card. And like when I feel sad, I read it and then I like almost tear up. So a handwritten thank you note. I mean, I'm Midwestern. Maybe that's just my style, but I'm here for it. So especially if it's an experience that you had like after your sophomore year and there's going to be a lot of time that passes between now and when you're applying to graduate school or medical school or whatever, it's not inappropriate and could be beneficial to just inform the PI like, hi, Professor Wolf. Thank you so much for letting me be in your group. This was really amazing. I'm planning to apply to graduate school in the fall of 2029. Oh, God, they haven't even been born yet. Anyway. Planning to apply to graduate school. I know that's a long way off, but if you would prefer to write a letter of recommendation now, like here's my info, and then you can like give them your info that you give to every letter writer, which you can find our online resources.
Yeah.
We'll link in the show notes the article that I once read about how to ask for a letter of recommendation. Maybe my advice is a little much because it's very like me, but.
And guess what? They're going to recycle that letter a lot.
So. Yeah. Oh, they straight up, every time you ask the same professor for a new letter of recommendation, they open it up. They change summer 2016 to summer 2017.
Yep.
And they say, I think Sally would be an excellent candidate for the Brody Fellowship to I think Sally would be an excellent candidate for the NIH whatever, whatever fellowship.
Yeah.
And then they add in a new paragraph about what you've done in the last 6 months since your previous letter, and they hit submit.
Yep.
So them having a really nice draft that they wrote at the time of your research internship, which then when you're graduating, they can add two new paragraphs about what they know you've been doing since.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, and my number one, you can't tell anyone, guys. It's a very super secret tip for keeping in touch with all professors. Just go to google.com/news, search their name, then set up a search alert for their name. Pray that they do not have a common name. I'll tell you what's about this, but anyway. Set up a search alert for their name. Then every time they publish a paper, do something cool, get an award, you'll get a little email. And like every once in a while for those emails, you send them an email yourself and you don't say that you have a search alert for their name, obviously. But you say like, dear professor, whatever. Congratulations. I saw that you just won the NIH Career Innovator Award. That's like a super big deal. I really appreciate it. I really appreciated my time in your lab. Like, hope everything is going well. And I'm really excited to see that Kayla's project has like finally been published. Like, I remember when she was working on it so hard. Like, love, Sally. Right?
And also, first of all, that's an awesome super secret, but now not so secret tip. But in terms of frequency, I think some people are a little bit confused.
Once a semester.
Yeah, it does. And yeah. Even that, it doesn't even have to be that much, I think. Mm. Like, especially if they're earlier, like once
a year is good. I think for me, I tried to do once a semester between when I like interacted with them and when I needed that letter of rec.
Mm.
Now, the professor from undergrad, like I still like them. I do not contact them once a semester, maybe like once a year.
Yeah.
But I've already gotten my letter of rec from them, so.
You're off.
And I'm no longer like a student in their classes, right? Like
yeah.
You would be in their lab and then like two semesters later you take their class, so you have like an ongoing relish. Yeah. They don't really care about me now that I've graduated. But if they ever want to be a guest in this podcast, you're welcome to come. My old professors. But I will tell you one of the former mentors that is my former mentor has the same name as someone who's like an up and coming low level hockey player.
Oh,
so, like,
congrats on your hockey game.
So, I keep, and like, the worst part is that this hockey player is like getting better.
Oh, no.
So, I used to see that, like, his high school, he would like have some goals and they would like send me emails. And like, during the wintertime, it was the worst because I would keep getting emails about this person that I don't care about. But I don't want to like update
yeah.
the alert. I guess I could put like name in quotes with not and then hockey in quotes. So, I'll probably change that right now. But anyway, but like, now he's in college. And he's continuing to have success in this hockey.
I see. Well, whatever gets you to remember.
Yeah.
To contact them, I guess.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
So. That was a very adjacent to the topic of summer research.
hockey, you know. Anyway. Yeah, I think those are good tips. And hopefully you will all have excellent summer experiences. I think you will.
Yeah. I'm happy. And then if you have any experiences that are amazing or that are not amazing and you want us to like tell our listeners about it, or you just want to tell Kayla and me like how our advice helped you, I think that for our website, I'm going to make a testimonial section.
Yes.
Only because then I can read it when I feel bad about myself.
I am all for that.
Anyway, also follow us on Twitter at Double She Licks Podcast. We have an Instagram on Twitter at Double She Licks Pod, on Instagram at Double She Licks Podcast.
Yes. And shout out to Jessica Lee.
Yeah.
Who is
our amazing Double She Licks team member.
Yes.
We don't want to call her our intern because we're going to give her like an amazing title.
Yeah. So
but we haven't gotten there yet.
Title TBD, but
Jessie's amazing. She's like totally revamping our website, so keep visiting doubleshelicks.com. It's getting better and better.
You can see the metamorphosis.
Yeah, exactly. Then we'll like fully launch and other people will think it's like a new beautiful butterfly, but you'll have seen the whole process
yeah.
all along. And then she's doing our Instagram. So our first post was, on our Instagram, our very first post warms my heart. So remember when the You Do Belong in Science series was happening and we had those little post-it notes that said You Do Belong in Science?
The stickers.
The sticker post-it notes. Those were so amazing. But you know what they were inspired by?
Tell us.
One of my former mentors. Yes, I have a Google alert out for her name. She, on her last day, like, I wasn't there, like, when she was totally leaving. And she wrote me this little note that says, "Sally, you rock and you dominate science." And I was like, this is amazing. I post-it noted it to my desk. When the PSA, pressure sensitive adhesive on the post-it note failed, I put it up there with a magnet. And it's up there, and I look at it every day. And so that's why we made the stickers, because I wanted other people to, like, feel this message of belonging from their mentors. And everyone who's gotten a sticker, like, we've mailed them out to some people, and, like, they're spreading the love of our stickers and spreading the message that you do belong in science. So even though our funding is gone, the sentiment of belonging is still going strong.
Exactly.
But anyway, that's our first Instagram post. So you can see the original sticker that inspired it, and then you swipe. Because Instagram, it's like, Jessie's really good at Instagram, so she can put, like, two pictures on the same thing. No. And then you swipe, and then you can see the post-it note, which you've all seen, but.
You should check it out.
Follow us on Instagram, because when I get new Instagram followers, it makes me feel good about myself, because I'm a millennial. And, Kayla, did I tell you the news?
No. Well, I don't know.
We finally have 20 reviews on the iTunes store.
What?
I know. I brought a strawberry nectarine pound cake to the Messersmith Lab earlier this week.
Make my snack.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, man.
You have until this episode comes out.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so please get us to 40 reviews. We don't know what the incentive is, but when we get to 40 reviews on the iTunes store, it will be better than home-baked goods for 40 strangers that you don't know.
Yeah. We'll think of something better.
We'll think of something better.
Or if you have suggestions.
If you have suggestions.
Just email us.
doubleshelixpodcast@gmail.com.
All right, well.
Okay.
Should we say thanks?
Thanks.
Thank you for listening and still listening. You're all awesome. You do belong in science. And
yeah, you do.